Malcolm Turnbull made his final address to the National Press Club today before the election, calling on Australians to stick to the plan, the Coalition's economic plan for jobs and growth. Meanwhile, Bill Shorten has fallen behind in the polls but is determined to fight to the finish, saying he doesn't want to come an honourable second. He's in it to win. But an honourable second would still be far greater than anyone expected of him just a few short years ago. I caught up with former Foreign Minister Bob Carr for his views on Bill Shorten's performance in this election campaign.
I heard Bill Shorten give an interview this morning. It was on Alan Jones. I've got to say, it was the best interview I've ever heard him give. He spoke with authority. He was cogent. And I thought this election campaign has been the making of this leader.
Do you think, though, that one of the issues for him is that he doesn't appear prime ministerial in the same way that Turnbull does?
Few opposition leaders do. So the classic problem for an opposition leader is we like this about him or her. Yes, we think they're intelligent. Yes, I think they've shown they're a strong leader. But have I got to the point yet where I see him or her meeting the Queen, stepping into the Oval Office? Probably not. But you look at Shorten's figures and he's lifted his status in the polls as an alternative prime minister to get within striking distance. I was always told when I was opposition leader in New South Wales that to be, say, 15 points behind as preferred premier was respectable territory and not a barrier to you winning the ultimate election.
Bill Shorten has indicated that he supports some kind of national integrity commission.
Yep.
Do you support a federal ICAC? He said this in the wake of the Eddie Obeid findings.
Yeah, I think you can do it without it being as expensive an apparatus as people might fear. Over time, however, it would get extra resources. So a government would have to make a conscious decision that we were going to have effectively a standing royal commission at the national level. I think a lot of people would need to be persuaded that there have been the sorts of revelations about malfeasance, if we can use that as a catch-all term, in national politics to justify it. But I think if we're not there now, we're almost there. What's emerged from ICAC, not only in respect of Eddie Obeid, but in respect of the Liberal Party in New South Wales setting up a structure to divert prohibited donations, that is from developers, prohibited under state law, to divert it into a federal entity and then to have the money allocated back to the state branch. People would see that as justifying a federal ICAC.
Are you concerned, as Professor Gary Sturgis is, about the issue of show trials, that the sense that the federal ICAC could just be watching their every move so that people become kind of frozen?
Yeah, I think that is a valid concern. I wonder whether there has been enough exposed about the behaviour of politicians in the federal arena to keep an ICAC fully engaged. The state ICACs, I think they exist in every jurisdiction or almost every one of the states, have got material flowing out of local government, out of the big state bureaucracies. I just wonder whether there's enough activity at the federal level to justify an ICAC. But there'd be a lot of people who'd think we're either at the point where it is justified or we're nearly there.
Coming back to the issue of the federal election, one of the key messages from Malcolm Turnbull in the wake of the Brexit has been the need to maintain stability because we've had so many changes. The last Prime Minister to serve a full term was John Howard. Do you think that message is cutting through with the voters?
I haven't seen polling, qualitative polling data, that's what you'd be looking for here, that says that that's a cut-through argument. It may be. All I'm saying is that I haven't seen the data. The Australian people have voted in state elections. Think of Queensland. Think of Victoria, to throw out a first-term government. So they haven't been over-influenced by arguments on continuity at the state level. I wouldn't be surprised if qualitative polling, detailed polling, did show that they were concerned about the frequency with which leaders have been changed. But I suppose a cynic could say the public demanded this through what they were saying to the pollsters. The public demanded that Abbott go, as the public demanded that Gillard go. Nonetheless, it is disturbing that this ethos has grown up in party rooms, that you respond to bad polling, even very bad polling in respect to the Abbott or the Gillard status, by executing the leader and bringing in a new leader, almost even if it's a stab in the dark.
Just one final question on the election. Malcolm Turnbull's message in recent days has been to warn against some kind of Labor-Greens-Independent alliance, which he describes as something that would be chaotic. But the reality is he's actually going to, based on that polling and the fact that people are seeming to want to have more independents, more disruptors in our political scene, that he's going to have a very difficult Senate to deal with regardless, isn't he?
Yeah, he's got to deal with a Senate that will be almost exotic in its diversity. The crossbench that he faces is likely to be bigger than the crossbench that exists now. If you think of the suggestions that Xenophon's team will claim 3 Senate seats, and of what might happen, even under the new rules about Senate preference flows in other states. One of the things that we will want explained to us on Monday is whether that crossbench in the Senate will give him the majority he'll want to cobble together for essential work of budget repair, as he sees it.
That's Bob Carr, former Foreign Minister. He's now Director at ACRI, the Australia-China Relations Institute, at the University of Technology, Sydney. And, of course, we'll see how things pan out on Saturday. That's up to you.